6 o'clock in the evening, you might have to make a night flight someplace in training. We got caught in a storm one time down in Texas. At night, we were flying a UC-78.
Okay, this is side two, and we're continuing with Whitey Iverson. Go ahead, Whitey.
Well, anyhow, this was Roger Johnson was a co-pilot. We got caught in a storm, and I'll tell you, that plane was turned upside down. We were climbing, going up 500 feet, and nose down. We were trying to dive down. And also to keep from sinking, we'd put a climbing attitude. We're still going down, and he was going ready to bail out. So he pulled the lock on the door, and the door flew through the sky. And I don't know where it's at today, but it's down in Texas someplace. But he was ready to bail out. I said, no, you're not going to bail out. We're going to sit here and fight this thing through. And about 15 minutes later, we were just out, quiet storm, flew back to the air base, no door. But that was kind of, but we never thought anything of it. It's a funny thing. I guess we were trained for that deal. We were trained to make forced landings, and acrobatic training was excellent. That's all your tail, your spins and stuff like that, and emblems and forced landings and all that stuff. So but the training period was pretty good.
You say you love to fly. Did you get a chance to do that then after your service?
I took the air test down to Kansas City and I passed the test for airlines, and I was going to fly for Flying Tigers. And at that time, the wages for Flying Tigers was $300 a month, and I was getting that here. And we were all settled, and I said, just stayed here instead. I probably should have taken it up, but you're going all the time. Flying Tigers was just starting out as a big air transport command in civilian life, and but they went bankrupt later on, so maybe lucky we didn't. So but I flew in reserve a little bit, but that's about it. It's too expensive a hobby to fly. It's costly. It costs you right now, if you get your airline license, $40,000. So I got a $40,000 ticket sitting up there.
Oh, let's go back to your times in the service again, and it's kind of the everyday life a little bit.
Well, you get up in the morning and at 5:30, and you, as a cadet, they called us cadets when we were in training, and we marched to the barracks and in formation, dismissed out there, went in to breakfast, and we had orange marmalade every morning, big jars of it. We had either scrambled eggs or hamburger and gravy on toast. And then from there, we cleaned up and got ready for formations day. We had 4 hours of phys ed, mind you. And that was swimming Laguna Beach in California. We were out there for advanced training. And I remember one time they took gasoline and oil, we had a big tower out there about half a mile in the ocean there. And they took us out there, and they put that oil and gas below the tower. The tower's about 30 feet high, and you had to take your turns, and they lit it a fire. And you had to jump into that flame, pretend you're abandoning the ship or something like that. And then you had to brush it away like this to swim underneath it or around like that. And that was kind of an experience. Of course, they had plenty of lifeguards out there to help if something went wrong. And then we had survival training. We had also had to take we dumped us into the suntans. Everything was Class A uniform, just dumped us in the water. And then you take your pants off and tie a knot in each leg, and then flip it over your head, get air in the deal, and use it as water wings. And then you had to do that for about 100 yards, Then the last 100 yards, you had to swim free style. And that's tough, and out in the ocean. But I happened to think of, well, parallel to that ocean, there was a docks, old docks out there. And I happened to drag my feet, and I hit a old post down there that in the water. And son of a gun, that was an old dock of some sort, and it had run for several yards. And I thought, well, there must be another post down there someplace. So, golly, I stood there and rested up and paddled water, and the old sergeant, he said, that's right, Iverson, just tread water, you'll rest up pretty well. And I was standing on that post. I swam down another 50 feet, and by the guy said, another post there, and I'd tread water. I think I was about the only one who made it. I never said anything to anybody. But, so that was, your phys ed was Neil, and the coach, the Oklahoma coach, was our phys ed instructor at that time. I can't think his name, but he was there. And then at weekends, we had free, of course, go into L.A. or like the rode the electric car and stuff like that. But we didn't still have any automobiles available whatsoever. And I think the thing that turned, you're talking about activities and posts, we were stationed in Texas this time. And I'll never forget this as long as I live. We were on a bus, raining, leaving the post, leaving our air base, going into Texas, going into town, El Paso. And by gosh, there were some black kids there. And we couldn't stop and pick those things up. We had half a bus load because they had a black bus, and that wasn't there yet. And even the barracks, we never trained with blacks. They had slept separate barracks, separate dining rooms, everything. They trained separately. I never got to see them hardly. But I thought myself, that was turning me to segregation. I mean, that's the first time I ever been exposed to it in my life. And I thought it was awful. I never thought much about it. Get down in the southern states, and the blacks were never allowed to fly until the last part of the war, and they were the most highly trained group of the, I can't think of the name of them.
Tuskegee? Tuskegee?
Yes. And they finally proved themselves. They never lost a bomber. They had to escort, their job was escorting bombers to Germany from England. They never lost one bomber. They were the best pilots in the world, and they were most highly decorated. And they come back to the States, and of course, they were treated like bums again. And it just turned me off. And I guess I'm pretty liberal as far as accepting different races and stuff like that. I just couldn't see it. That's my first experience I had with segregation. And the Southern boys thought that was fine. So, like I said, you grow up in the service and such as that. But during the day, of course, it's all training. We flew up. Whenever the weather's fine, why, we had to fly. Rain or fog or wind to make a difference. So it kept us busy.
What was the food like?
Good. Of course, I never complained because I got good food in the farm, but I never get anything fancy. And we had good food.
How did you and your friends entertain yourselves in the downtime?
You know, the funny part of it is we didn't have much downtime. You were so busy during the day and would come into barracks, you were tired. And you had to either wash your clothes, press them, iron them, and you had a place there to fix it up. But you really didn't have much downtime because a lot of times you had to get up at 4 or 5 o'clock for flying duty. So I don't remember much about it, but once in a while we'd go to show. But we had a lot of group of people, they used to come out there.
Yes. USO?
USO. We had some top-notch, Bob Hope, Bing Crosby, and we had a lot of people traveling around the country giving USO shows. And that was all free to us. And we had big auditoriums and, or sometimes out in the open field. Some air-based hangars. We had all of, most of the time it was in hangars. But, so you had a lot of fun.
Did you keep a personal diary or anything
no,
like that?
Never thought about it. I wished I would have.
Did you ever have any time on leave?
No.
Nope.
Never had leave.
What did you think of President Roosevelt?
I thought he was a great, great man. I'll tell you why. He started Roosevelt in the 30s. This country was almost on the end of the stick as far as a democracy. It just absolutely could have gone into anarchy at any time because there's no jobs, nothing. Big depression. And I remember in junior in high school, I had to have a nickel for a class party. Folks didn't have a nickel. She churned a pound of butter and we sold it for 14 cents. Roosevelt come out with this PWA, WPA, CCC camp, NYA, National Youth deal in high school. You could work as janitor or something like that. And he put the country to work again. Of course, what salvaged his deal was World War II broke out. And then everything started to get a little bit better. People were at work and they saved money and bought homes afterwards and cars. And but there were no cars available. We got out of service. Vi and I put our name in for a car. We were 451 on the waiting list for a car, Chevrolet, and then we had to take what came in. We didn't have any choice of color, style, or anything. And then the brand new automobile, I think Vi remembers it, was $1,400 in some sense for a brand new car. And and there's rationing, of course, but Roosevelt, as far as I'm concerned, saved the country pretty well from anarchy and plus brought the country out of depression with his programs. Because farmers had to work on WPA, been PWA, the post office down here by the Public Works Administration, I believe. And old Jim Farley was the postmaster then. And it was a time that, but we never thought everything was, you know, we never had television to tell us how poor we were. And you never really thought about having a tough time because everybody's in the same boat. And Roosevelt was a very powerful speaker. He could speak on radio. Of course, there's no television then. And he could almost make you feel good about yourself. If you didn't have any shoes or food to eat, he'd still make you feel good. And then he had these public works programs, national parks, and put just people to work. And I think that when he died, he was in, I believe it was in his third term when he died. And I was down in Texas in the Air Force when he died in April, I believe, in 1945, in some places in there. But he was a strong man.
And then what did you think about Truman?
Oh, I thought he was quite an exciting man. I really thought he'd done a lot of the country a lot of good. And as a Democrat, I wasn't a Democrat, but I still thought he told it like it was, and I think he was very honest. Of course, Pendergast was the the boss, Kansas City boss of politics, and I suppose maybe Truman was involved a little bit. I don't know, but I thought he was a good man. He came on stronger after he died than anything else. Eisenhower was during a period where we didn't have any, the country was just kind of going along, laid back, and he had a good leader from wartime experiences, the country was very quiet, getting over World War II, so there's a difference here.
What are your thoughts on the use of the atomic bomb?
Well, I went over the place where the atomic bomb was tested in New Mexico, and we didn't know it. We saw this huge glass-like bowl out there, the sand and certain. I don't know. I suppose it was all right to save a lot of American lives during that time. But boy, maybe we'd been better off in this world if it hadn't been ever developed. I don't know. It's all right for peaceful. I know in France you see a lot of these atomic energy power plants. The world's got a lot of them. I think we're going to be having them here. Well, we have a few of them here, but not extensively. But I don't know. I'd hate to see them used again. Because with the knowledge we have of atomic energy, I think it can blow this world apart practically.
Do you recall the day your service ended, and what were the circumstances?
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that we were, Vi and I were married, and we were up in the hotel room watching the parade that World War II was over. Japan had surrendered. People were literally tens of thousands of them in the streets of Lincoln. And right below our hotel, they were tipping cars over. They were celebrating. They couldn't close the liquor store because the people wouldn't let them. They just emptied the shelves. And so it was a one all-night celebration. Really, it was. And then they had of course, after World War II was over, for about 2-3 weeks there, they put a rent, they froze all the rent on the apartments so the people would, because there'd be an influx of people coming off wanting the jobs and go to school. And the GI Bill was, of course, developed. That was the greatest thing on earth, you know. I wish they'd have it now. I'm a great believer in just like free education. I really believe that the country now, the GI Bill, is getting off the subject a little bit. But the GI Bill was a wonderful thing because it paid for itself in many ways because it increased the earning power of the educated person. There's a lot of kids that never go into college. And it's the saddest thing in the world when you see people in poverty, and that probably kid in poverty never gets a chance. He probably is a doctor sitting there in that brain, same way in Africa. My God, it just hurts you every time you think about it. But there's a lot of work. I tell you, I'm convinced that there's a wonderful future out there for young people in building the infrastructure of a country. And that's what we need to do. If you can't, just like if you produce a product and you can't get it to the market, it's no good. And I think there's a tremendous future, though, out there. I really do. I'd like to be a young man of about 20 facing the future right now. I think it's wonderful. I really do.
Did you make use of the GI Bill at all?
Oh, you bet I did.
In what ways?
Oh, I went to University of Nebraska and a graduate school. You bet. I paid for all your expenses, your tuition, books, and fees. And if you needed I can't even think of it now. What's that deal that you had to figure out? Your mathematics slide, math. And that's the name of it, isn't it? There's a slide. Instead of using a computer or a calculator, you had that slide.
Mm-hmm.
And they paid for that, and typewriters, and anything you wanted. And, of course, the tuition then at the University of Nebraska, believe it or not, was only $500 a year. Just think how, I think this is sad with how the cost of college has gone up. Because now I think it's close to $20,000 a year if you were to sit down and pay for it. The GI Bill is wonderful. That's the reason why that it doesn't cost the country anything. It'll be paid back in taxes a year later on.
After your service ended, what was the readjustment like back to civilian life when you returned?
Didn't bother me a bit. I went from lieutenant. The next day I was cleaning out oil barrels and had to have a job. I went right down Hampus Motor Company in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I cleaned out 55-gallon barrels, and I was just in horrible shape. But I had to have it. And everybody's the same boat. Again, I got a job as a cook in the student union. They were advertised for cooks. Two other pilots and myself went up there and told us we were experienced cooks. They hired us right away. We didn't have any experience, but we got a job. And first month we run the student union, $500 in the hole. But that wasn't our fault, basically. But anyhow, it was a lot of fun. I cooked all the way through college. And we got, I think, 75 cents an hour in our meals. But the University of Nebraska is a wonderful college. I mean, I worked there when Johnny Carson was there at the student union downtown. See, I was in the East Campus. She was in the main campus downtown. She was in the elementary ed division. I was, of course, in the ag college out there. Wonderful professors we had. They talk about the honor system. We had a old Dr. Gooding. He'd give us a test, and if you missed a class, you could take it home and do it. And he trusted you. And that's the honor system, that you'd never cheated. And the kids can't quite understand that, how you could do that. And the same way I told him one day about substituting, about the honor system, I said, would you like to have a doctor cheat? Would you like to have an airline pilot cheat? I said, by golly, the honor system it works if you really get the kids around to it. That's my feeling of it.
And so, could you describe what you went on to do as a career?
Yeah, I wanted to be a forest ranger. I really did. But they didn't have forestry at the University of Nebraska. Levi was in her junior or senior year at the University of Nebraska, so I thought I better stick around here. And so went into agronomy and ag education. And I enjoyed it because I enjoyed teaching the 36 years. I really did. I had wonderful kids. Most of them are farm kids. And of course, when I first started teaching, there was a farm, big farm families and four farms to a section of land. And so it was very nice. No discipline problems. I didn't have a discipline problem as long as I taught. The kids would come to work, but the parents were the family was very strong. And the woman was never working. She was home, because it wasn't necessary. Now it's almost a necessity that the wife works. So that takes one of the posts of support out.
You mentioned after the war when yourself and Vi purchased mm-hmm. the new car.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you took part in the post-war economic boom?
But I never even given much thought. I was satisfied with what I was doing. I loved my job. And I suppose if I was in real estate or something like that, that was the big item, because then I don't know whether I was part of that boom or not, but I know there was a lot of wealth made, a lot of wealth lost. But no, we were satisfied. Of course, we were lucky enough to have both of us employed teaching. And that helps when you're living on a double salary. And when Lynn went to college, she worked out the Game Lodge in the Black Hills 3 years, and she made enough in tips to almost put her way to college to Westmar. At that time, Westmar was only about $1,100 a semester, and so she earned most of her way through. I think your dad and Lynn went to school together, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good friends.
Yeah.
It sounded to me like maybe you kept in touch with some of your friends from the service afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
Could you kind of describe that a little bit?
Well, we'd get together. At the reunion, we had doctors and lawyers and judges, and we had just about everything. But when we got together for reunion, you would never talk or bragging on what you were doing. It was just reminiscing of your wartime deals. But it was nice.
Were there a lot of those reunions?
Yeah, there's been one every year. I took the last one was this year, I believe, Dayton, Ohio, the big Air Force Museum down in Dayton. And it's getting less and less because they're in their 80s, you know, middle 80s. And so there's not many of us left.
Do you ever watch today's war movies?
I used to, but not anymore. No, I Saving a Private Ryan. I loved that. That was real a good film. It really was. But I like the educational channels. There was a program on the other night that lasted for about an hour. The importance of music in public schools, how it affects people and their grades and everything. Tremendous film on that. Back in New York City, how they taking these black children, putting them in a music program, and my gosh, they went from 2.5 to up to 3.8 averages just in music stimulus, you know, discipline. So, no, like I said, it's. I got a lot of faith in our students today because I think they've done a tremendous job out there with the computers and all the sophisticated internet stuff. If you use it right, it's wonderful. But there's a danger to it, but we got all kind of nuts running loose, and they've been running loose for the last 500 years, so.
How do you think your life might have been different if you hadn't served during the war?
I probably never had the GI Bill, and I don't know what the economic conditions of the United States would have been if the war hadn't been a stimulus for recovery. But my brother, there's three of us, and we all went through college in the farm. One was at Augustana College, and he was ended up being a service manager of the Caterpillar Company. Very, very good job. The other, my next oldest brother, was the head of the Vocational Education Division in the state of South Dakota, Peer. And he taught at the college at Springfield. And maybe we'd have made it through by working. College wasn't expensive then. And you didn't have to you didn't have SAT scores or anything else, you know, you just showed up. You didn't have to take any entry exams or anything. And if you didn't succeed, you didn't succeed. You dropped out, you were booted out. So they had the separation right then at the grade level. So I guess that was it was a pretty good time to go to college. Cheap. And there was nothing else to do.
A few years back, Tom Brokaw wrote a book. Yeah. He labeled Your Generation.
I have the book.
The Greatest Generation. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, wonderful. Well, just about, he hit it about right. Because just, for instance, on the farm, cash wasn't used, money. You helped your neighbor, and he exchanged work back and forth. You might work a day more, but I remember my dad sending us over to help neighbors, and then their kids come back and help. And it just was that way. And so I don't know. I realized I have to accept this, the fact that life is changing as far as the culture is concerned. We don't have exchange work now. You work for somebody and you get paid for it. Then you didn't get paid, you just worked to accommodate somebody, help them out. And I think that was the big thing we're missing today.
Well, that's about all my questions. Is there anything you'd like to add that I didn't ask or we didn't get to in this interview?
No, I think pretty well covered a lot of things that kind of indirectly informal. And my experiences, my grandson, I wrote a book for him, a little book of all my experiences, you know, riding horses and on the farm and I was growing up and riding bull calves hitchhiking. I hitchhiked all through the country, never owned an automobile, and everybody would give you a ride. And I remember hitchhiking to Wisconsin one time for summer work, had to have it for college. The guy left me off on the Winona, Minnesota, and I walked across the wooden bridge across the Mississippi River at midnight, the fog rolling in. I tell you, that was an experience, kind of like the depicted England, you know, in the streets of England, the fog settles in. Well, that's just the way that old bridge was. And I walked across there, and I didn't have any money. And I ended up in a restaurant where there was an old truck stop. Police showed up. They said, well, you can't hitchhike in Wisconsin. But they got me a ride with an egg truck into Marshfield, Wisconsin, and I worked as an ice plant out there for one summer. But you never really thought about it. You hitchhiked all over. You just, on the job, you jumped the rail cars, and harvest fields in North Dakota, same way, you rode the rails. They'd kick you off once in a while, but it was an experience. So we had experiences then that a little different than experiences you have today.
Okay, is there anything else you want
to
do?
No, that's about it.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for your help with this, Whitey.
I don't know if that's the kind of interview you wanted, but...
It was great. So. It really was. Okay, this will end the interview.
Yeah, okay.